Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you going to get me the ball?
I'll get you the ball.
I want the ball.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of 11 Personnel, the 51st edition of 11 Personnel. We've been doing this for one whole year, Adam Luckett. Pandemic be damned, and we only miss 1 week. I think that's pretty good if I do say so myself.
Good pat on the back, Mr. Roush.
I'm
surprised we made it this far.
I was just mad that when episode 50 came up last week, I didn't look up which number we were on until I was editing it after the fact. I was like, damn it, we should have like had confetti or streamers or at least like the little kazoos, you know, but didn't have any of that celebration. So I hope you all pop some bottles for us. I hope it was Bud Light time for you because you had a birthday to celebrate too.
I did on Tuesday, my man. Now you, 31 hits a lot different than 21. I will say that.
Damn, you're old, Luckett.
I know.
You're in your 30s. I'm still in my 20s.
I'm entrenched now. Now I'm 2 years in the 30s.
What would be a 31 package? We're 11 personnel. What's 31 personnel?
Is it three running backs, one tight end? So it's a well wishbone. Wishbone. Yeah.
You know what? If there was ever going to be a Kentucky football team to do a little wishbone, why not now?
Mm-hmm.
We'll smoke a little Rodriguez.
They did. They did do that kind of when Neil Brown was here, that inverted wishbone where they would have they would bring just the tight ends in behind the guard, and then they'd have the running back in the back. So Kentucky sold air raid, and then they were running inverted wishbone because they couldn't pass ball.
I love that on it might have been the NCAA football game, either that or Madden, but they just called it Full House. It's like,
Full House backfield.
What are you just running out of names? So you're just like, you know what? Let's go to the card games. I can't wait to see Royal Flush. Which, by the way, while I mentioned video games real quick, I swear to God, if I see people complain one time about a stupid video game ranking, my head's going to freaking explode. It's the dumbest. Of all of the developments from just living life on the internet, Madden ranking arguments is number one dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life.
Shouts to EA Sports for providing a bunch of people some content.
Oh, man, I bet you.
This has been weeks now of that going on.
I'm just I'm surprised that I didn't see more of a reaction from the Louisville fans because Lamar Jackson had like an 80 in break tackle instead of a 90 in every other category. Dorks. It just drives me nuts. But you know what? Today is a day to be happy because since the last time we talked, we've had a lot of developments. Not necessarily bad. And actually, I think there's been more good developments, more positivity flowing than anything else. And first and foremost, we got ourselves some Phil Steels to go around. Cheers to that, Adam Luckett. Phil Steels all around. It's football season.
It's officially July. It's not July until I get to feel still. We got it a little later this year. Usually we get it a couple weeks prior to right now. But how much have you dug into it?
Well, here's the thing. I was going to try to save it till then, but you know, let's just dive right into our Phil Steele consumption. So our friends over at 11 Personnel, Drew Franklin and Matt Jones, they love to tease Phil and his power suite picks. And it's very
our
easy.
Friends at free, our free money friends.
Yes. But like Phil is great at the preseason stuff. It's very detailed. And he has a method to his madness, but here's the thing. And it's something that I don't think I picked up on as much until they started bringing up all of his different picks. This dude really sells himself like no other when it comes to Oh, I just want to pull up the page of his sleep.
Go to self-promotion.
I mean, his this goes back to his most improved teams. Or it wasn't even – I don't think it was his most – yeah, his most improved teams. And so – or who will be this year's surprise team? And this article was three pages. And if you've seen Phil, I mean, it is just never-ending font. It's not exactly easy to read. And he uses a ton of numbers. So he's going back to his surprise teams all the way back to 2002 and basically riddling off every year bragging about how his surprise number three team ended up winning the national championship. And then you go to look at his surprise teams for this year, and, oh, Texas A&M is your number one surprise team, Phil. That outside-of-the-box thinking there. Nobody's picking that.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the North Carolina Tar Heels. I mean, of course – that's the part where I got kind of mad. And, like, Virginia Tech, of course, Virginia, they've got that Rayshard Ashby back, Hendon Hooker, of course. Like, this isn't exactly rocket science. But I will say that in all of his kind of bragging about getting things right in the past, he does keep it consistent. Like, the way Phil Steele has done things in 26 years, he's only made slight changes. And I think, look at the biggest – thing and the most significant thing that he does is his what's the word I'm looking for? Let me get the exact phrase pull up. His experience chart.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially for all of these college football folks, the basics of it are, what are you bringing back and who you got coming in? And Phil's experience chart, it's all of the lettermen that are returning. It accounts starters, and then it also puts an extra weight on quarterback production returning, because no matter which way you cut it, quarterback play, it matters significantly in how a team's, you know, going to do this fall.
Yeah, it's pretty important.
So in Kentucky, in his experience chart, last year they were 105th. Obviously, you're losing.
He mentions this too in every – you don't even have to go through, like, these first 20 pages are just him kind of, like, throwing out, you know, his top draft eligible players, his most surprised teams, his most improved teams, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. But he just mentioned, if you just go read through each team's post, he'll throw all that stuff in there. Especially when you just read the little overall section is really the most important thing to read.
And every time he talks about Kentucky, it's on the experience chart, because they're jumping from 105th to 39th, and some of that's quarterback play, but a lot of it's you really only lose Lynn Bowden when it comes to returning tackles, returning yards. And that's the biggest jump in the SEC, and they might be, I believe, when I looked at it, Tennessee was the only team that had more experience on there as well. And that's why a lot of people are saying, well, this is probably going to be Tennessee's year. The only difference is that Tennessee's got a messy quarterback situation with God knows who running, with a guy who doesn't know how to work a telephone, potentially playing quarterback for him.
And they just lost a starter on the D-line.
Yes, who the nose guard, who he tore his ACL last year. Mm-hmm. Was it Dwight Gooden? Is that his name?
Emmett,
yeah. And then was arrested for domestic assault, kicked off the team. But Kentucky, I thought of all of the takeaways, like it, Kentucky, I mean, it echoes what we had already said before, but the experience is good to see it backed up with Phil's chart.
And then you look at his top 25, SEC East is kind of stacked, man.
Yeah, they're what, fourth on it? The fourth SEC East team in that? Mm-hmm. They're ranked in the top 25 at 21, which –
right.
Hey,
Tennessee's right above them, I think, at like 20 or 19.
When was the – that's another good question. When was the last time we had a Kentucky football team preseason top 25?
Not in my lifetime.
I mean, in anyone's lifetime? Is there anybody listening to this out there right now?
I mean, I'm sure that 75 team, back-to-back, 74-75, they had to be top 25. The only thing – or the only caveat with that was they were on probation, so they might have not –
they might have not ranked him in the preseason.
Able to be ranked, yeah. Right.
Texas A&M was also higher on his experience chart, by the way. But, yeah, no, it feels good to be in a preseason top 25. It's just that this is the 1 year where where they're in the preseason top 25, but they he still hasn't finished in fourth in the East, just ahead of South Carolina, Missouri, and a distant Vanderbilt.
If you read the language, them and Tennessee are pretty daggone close. I think the coin flip was the games in Knoxville.
Yeah, yeah. And unfortunately, there's uncertainty around each team's quarterback play. On the one hand, you don't know if Joey Gatewood will be there to provide depth in the event that Terry Wilson isn't who we thought he would be coming off injury. And then on Tennessee's hand, you just got a mixed bag of who are we going to pull out today to play quarterback for us?
And, right.
So, man, that game being at Tennessee is annoying as hell. And, of course, two of the weird stats that Phil did throw out about Kentucky were how bad the Cats have been in their SEC season finale. Up until beating Vanderbilt last year in the SEC finale, that was the first season-ending SEC win in, I don't know, 8-9 years, and all of the ones on the road. So it hadn't been good. Hadn't been good like it.
Well, you have to think about, for the longest time, Tennessee was always the last game. And they only beat them once at the end. That was Joker's second season.
So it was probably the last time they
won. In 2017, when Stoops beat them, that's when they started messing with that schedule. And now they play them
October.
Around Halloween.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's in Lexington, at least. So, obviously. It was the same with the – can never win a first SEC game. Like Kentucky only had won a couple over 3 decades. That was because Florida was always the first SEC game. So when you have 3-decade-long losing streaks almost, you have some ugly trends like that.
Right, right. And, you know, there's plenty of other kind of really nitty-gritty numbers. I'm not going to go through every single one of them. But the one thing that I did find interesting, Luckett, that probably – surprised me more than anything else was Kentucky's depth chart that he has listed.
Phil big on Kelvin Joseph, my man. I think he had him third or fourth team all SEC.
Yeah. And that both of those things like it are surprising in that of all of the all SEC, like Kentucky had the second best pass defense in the nation, first in some metrics, but one of the best secondaries in the nation. And they return everybody except Jordan Griffin. And the guy that you have representing that unit is somebody who didn't even play last year. He's a big man of Boss Man, big fan of Boss Man Fat.
Yeah, I was a little surprised with that. No use of Corker. That was surprising at all on all the teams.
Yeah, I don't, I guess that one doesn't make much sense, maybe because he didn't have the kind of PBU or interceptions stats last year. I don't really understand that one, but.
But Phil also does the old just plug in 4 DBs. So you have a lot of corners on there, not so many or as many safeties.
But in the actual depth chart, he does go position by position.
And right.
This is pretty close to the depth chart that I would create.
Justin Rogers.
See, and that's where the two differ. He has Justin Rogers ahead of Phil Hoskins, and he also has Jeremy Flax as the first team left guard. Now, Luckett, I know Phil talks to most coaches before the season, and the conversations he has with them really helps him fill out the depth chart. So knowing that, I tend to think that that's where the coaches' heads are at, with the caveat that he typically tweets out a big thank you to whoever he just talked to.
Yeah, so, I don't think he does. So they Stoops and him on speed dial.
Yeah, so I don't think I saw one of those tweets from Phil. So
to me, he's leaning on recruiting rankings here.
All right, I didn't know if whether to think more on recruiting rankings or on the he's talking to coaches.
I think with Kelvin Joseph, Justin Rogers, and Flax, he's leaning on recruiting rankings. Especially when you look at those positions. Well, Flax, you've got an unproven guy in Horsey who's never really played. And then Rogers, him over Phil Hoskins is a bit of a surprise. But that's a big-time recruit. That's a kind of caliber recruit that Kentucky never gets. So you see that, you probably automatically think, well, he's probably going to start if he's coming to Kentucky.
Yeah, and I feel like the coaches are pretty high on Phil. And so I would see them giving the six-year senior the nod over the true freshman.
I have a little hot take about that defensive line room.
Oh.
I'm not so sure Justin Rogers is the best freshman defensive lineman coming in.
Oh, who do you think is the best freshman defensive lineman coming in?
My favorite one coming out of high school was Hayes, Josiah Hayes. I just think he's got the total package. Whereas Rogers, you know, he played both ways. A lot of people thought he was a guard. Where Hayes, I think he could play all three positions on that three down front for Kentucky. I think he could be a nose guard. I think he could play, you know, the four, the three, the five technique. I think he could do it all. And those Mississippi guys, man, they usually produce, right? Yeah. Especially the high-rated guys in this league.
And, no, that you make really good points like it. Man, and with Rogers as well, I believe he got here a little bit later. Of course, the learning curve is going to be much steeper this year because everybody was off campus. So having him in general ahead of a senior is, I think, a little bit much. And also on the defensive line, it's more about, I mean, the old saying is it's not who's starting, it's who finishes the game. And that's going to be the case a lot of time with these guys. They're going to be rolling in and out.
They're going to be at least 10 deep on that D-line this year, rotation-wise.
And really the only team you got to worry about getting stuck on the field with some guys is Mississippi State.
Well, the thing with Leach, though, is they don't move a whole awful fast. It's not really a tempo offense. There is some ball control too. That like they will take their time. They're not running, sprinting up to the line of scrimmage. So you can substitute against them.
It would be. I'm just like, curious. The whole
Drinkwitz is pumping. He's pumping this hurry up spread attack.
With what quarterback?
Yeah. But at the times I've watched his offenses, I've never thought, you know, this is some high octane, like pedal to the metal.
Oh, so he sounds like every other first year head coach.
Yeah. So
we're going to run tempo. About
trying to sell tickets that people aren't going to even be able to buy.
While we're on quarterbacks, I would like to point out that so Phil ranks every single position group in the SEC. He ranks them nationally too. And Kentucky had, I think, fifth-ranked offensive line, and then he ranked their defensive backs and special teams 15th overall. Mm-hmm. In the SEC, these are his quarterback rankings. Georgia, A&M, Florida, Auburn, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State are all tied for first. And then
– he's probably not wrong, man.
Tied for second, a.k.a. Now,
this,
seventh.
Was this before JT Daniels?
This was before JT Daniels.
Yeah, they. I think you got to put them probably at number one.
And then the second tier is Alabama, LSU, Tennessee, Kentucky, South Carolina, Arkansas, Missouri 13, Vanderbilt 14. So it's really two tiers and then Missouri and a distant 14th Vanderbilt, which is that's just hilarious to see it on paper. Because you're – I mean, it might not be that far off because you're really splitting hairs.
Oh, yeah, I'm
Kyle with Trask or Kellen Mond, but, like
– I mean, I'm driving the Bryce Young. Like, he's the best quarterback in this league. And I think if he plays, he'll probably be first-team All-SEC. Yeah. But do you remember a couple years ago, like, when the league was down? It was probably, like, 2014-15. The big issue was just, like, the quarterback play. Just kind of stuck.
AJ McCarron was like the best quarterback.
Right.
SEC.
It's this year is kind of looking like it in a certain way. But I think the league has some better offensive play callers now than it did back then, too.
Yeah, there's
Mullen been a at lot Florida, more. Leach, yeah. Kiffin's back. We got a Bryles here at Arkansas.
God, a Bryles.
LSU's actually throwing the football now. Jimbo's back in the league, so you would think that since the play calling is better, but there is definitely a sense when I looked at this, just quarterback play kind of everybody's kind of, I think, gobbled up together. There's no real Tua and Joe Burrow that are heads and shoulders above everybody else. I think everybody's pretty close.
Right, right. There's nothing clear. And to mention all of the kind of teams cobbled together is that SEC East, where I know you wanted to talk a little bit at length at just the depth of it, but this feels like a Georgia is down kind of year, but it's only because they're retooling their offensive line and they're going to have a brand new quarterback for the first time in a while. They've got, 40 blue chip guys. Tennessee, right. Same thing. When you if you base it just off of recruiting rankings across the board, the talent hasn't been there in the SEC East in quite some time. I think the difference, Luckett, is you just don't have the back in the day when you thought of the SEC East being dominant, there was like three great teams, and you don't have that this time around.
Yeah, I mean, there's a debate whether you can consider Florida among that, kind of top six, seven group in college football. I mean, Mullins produced, 23 wins or whatever it is the first 2 years, two New Year's Six Bowls, no bad losses, a couple upsets. On a big stage, they've kind of gotten punked by Georgia a little bit, but they're up there. They've got a lot of attention. Georgia just – it's really just recruiting star power. Like you said, they just have maybe the most talented roster in the sport. If not, it's right there with Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State. Especially they're right there with them. Right. Well, that's, I think, the story with Georgia. I know everybody wants to talk about their offense, but that defense is, I mean, it's going to be the best defense in the country. They're going to be buck nasty. But in the, like, what does that do though? Like, cause this seems like a defense where Kirby's probably going to be like, all right, offense, don't mess it up.
We'll win 10-3.
Score 17 points, and we're probably going to win the game. So, I mean, especially with a league that might have a lot of quarterback issues too. But at the same time, he's brought in this Todd Monken to upgrade a passing game, and he's got two marquee transfer quarterbacks. So how he balances that whole situation, I think, is going to be interesting.
Yeah, I got a little distracted. Elijah Moore is still playing college football. Didn't know that. Thought he was long gone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wide receivers stacked in this league, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. But I think there's one guy who might be – well, two guys that are kind of head and shoulders above the rest. Jamar Chase, ever heard of him? Jalen Waddle, ever heard of him? He doesn't even have Jalen Waddle. I guess he's got him as a returner. But he doesn't have him as a first-team receiver.
Devontae Smith, Alabama. George Pickens, Georgia.
I wouldn't take Jalen Waddle. That dude's a freak.
He's freaky.
Now, I mentioned Ole Miss. It's time to talk about the Egg Bowl. Egg Bowl going to Egg Bowl. And today, one of my it's probably one of my favorite Mississippi football stories in at least 6 months. And that is Lane Kiffin comes to town, and he's trying to fill out his next recruiting class. All right, he had a few weeks to get that 2020 class together. John Summerall goes and swipes Josiah Hayes from him, and it says, "Oh, you thought you had this guy? Not." But he's still trying to get his guys together. And it's typical if a kid that committed to another coach, if he's not going to stay around in the league or, for the same team, you got a new coach coming in. It happens. There's some turnover. Well, this time, it was with a kicker. Which kicker? Okay, they're dime a dozen. But the kicker that he said, buddy, sorry, see you later. It's the mayor of Oxford, Mississippi's son. So that kid
decommits. I love that this is an Egg Bowl podcast.
Oh, my gosh. So that kid decommits. And 40 minutes later, the new kicker commits. Saying, see you later.
Only Kiffin's out here flipping kickers.
He's flipping kickers. And not only a regular kicker, but the kicker whose mother – is a politician in town. Look, what do you think is going to happen if this new kicker misses an important field goal? You think those boosters and those political, all the important people hobnobbing in the Grove, you think they're going to like it? I mean, this is just a recipe for disaster, and nothing would make me happier if Lane Kiffin flipping a kicker starts his downfall before he even plays a game.
Well, maybe I don't know how much sway that mayor of Oxford has in the Ole Miss booster crowd, but
right, it's not like T-Boone Pickens at, or RIP at Oklahoma State, but there's still a. I'm so fascinated by this story.
It's
so ridiculous.
One thing about COVID is taken away is. It robbed us of these 3 weeks in the summer right now of all the sound bites we would have got from Leach and Kiffin at Media Days. And then that would have been a huge talking point, just them two. And then you would have seen a bunch of articles written about the Egg Bowl upgraded, how big this game is, how awesome it's going to be. Now we don't kind of get that hype. So that really –
it's a real shame. Stinks.
Yeah, it's a shame.
So the – what's even better is that Bunky Perkins, very funny Twitter follow, at Bunky Perkins, tweeted out a screenshot of the mayor of Oxford, Robin Tannehill, tweeting out, never kick field goals, score touchdowns. That's a Lane Kiffin tweet that she retweeted. Oh, man, the Egg Bowl. It's so stupid. I love it. I absolutely love it. And like you said, we're missing out on the best of the best right now, but it happens. Egg Bowl is stupid storylines aside. The big storyline around Lexington this week, CJ Conrad, which we don't know what the CJ stands for. Have we ever known?
Was it on his Kentucky bio?
How do I not know this? I would think that like whenever he would do something really good, I would say his entire
it was
name.
Just a junior.
I think Cameron that's like 50-50
50-50 shot on a lot of those J's.
You're right, like Terry Jr. Man, this would be really annoying.
Well, his dad's name's Mike, so it's not that. So I'm on his UK bio right now.
Oh, man. Yeah, I just pulled it up. Wow, you're all gonna have to let us know what CJ Conrad's name stands for.
Maybe it's CJ.
It's just CJ. It's just CJ. But CJ Conrad, he is returning to the University of Kentucky to be a grad assistant this fall. It's an off the field capacity, so there'll be some dumb rules, you know, that he must abide by, that he's restricted from doing this or that or the other. But nevertheless, he's gonna be helping out the tight ends, watching film. Back in the building after only one season away. And like we talked to him today, and you want to talk about a dude who is the victim of poor timing.
Yeah.
When he laid it all out there, I knew the timing was bad, but I just didn't realize how bad until he kind of laid it all out there today.
It's hard to make it in that league, man. And a lot of positions are kind of a dime a dozen, so you got to hit it right. If you don't hit it right, you can get passed over pretty quick.
And I pulled up the Mel Kiper article where he rated CJ and Josh Allen as the top draft eligible college football players at their respective positions going into that 2018 season. And to go from that to undrafted and signed to a practice squad, It was all because of one medical test. Now, luckily, CJ has a good head on his shoulders. He's like, you know what? There were about 2.5 weeks where I didn't think I was going to even get a shot. So I'm just lucky that I at least got my shot. The problem that he had, though, he gets his practice squad shot. And the Giants are like, you know what? We want to keep you around. You're going to have to, you know, keep working through OTAs and kind of earning your keep, but we want to keep you around. Well, then OTAs get canceled, and they start drafting more guys. And really, whatever opportunity he had, it was gone.
And they changed coaching staffs too.
Right. So whatever shot he had, it was done, and he had to try with a new team. Well, as he put it, there was only six or seven or eight teams. He said basically 80% of the league didn't even want to mess with him after his medical condition, even after he got cleared. And so you narrow your window to six or seven teams. Oh, and then a pandemic happens and you can't even work out for him. It really was just like the man above giving him two big middle fingers saying, you know what? This ain't for you, because you get an unexpected heart condition and then you have a pandemic happen. I mean, I can't think of a worse – I mean, aside of like a Jay Williams kind of incident where it's you almost die kind of deal, like
right.
Two unforeseen circumstances out of his hands. But to hear him be kind of upbeat about it, it was like, you know what? I was just kind of tired of sitting around. I got my shot. It didn't work out. On to the next. And I appreciated his attitude about it, because if I was in those shoes, there's no way I could have that same attitude about things.
It stinks. It just absolutely stinks. That day at the combine, just when he got that test, changed everything.
Absolutely brutal.
And then the train was off the tracks and just couldn't get it back on. But now he's back in the program. And I think that's a healthy thing for a program to have – successful players like that come back and still be a part. See it with Courtney Love, now Maxwell Smith even, and now C.J. Conrad coming back. I think that's a good thing overall.
Yeah, and those are all – you got a quarterback, a team captain linebacker, team captain tight end. And C.J. and Courtney, they were roommates too, which I had forgotten. But that is a good point. And I do think it is going to be kind of a weird dynamic, because like aside from Big Nick, he was playing with all those guys, you know, 2 years ago.
Yeah.
So, and
same with Courtney Love too, when he came back.
Right. Right. So, but I like seeing CJ back. You'll never believe this though, Luckett. Somebody asked if we're going to throw the ball to the tight ends more. Hey, tale as old as time. That question will never not be asked.
You know what's going to happen here, Mr. Nicholas?
It's finally going to happen?
Keaton Upshaw is going to get about 45 receptions one year, and we're going to get this call. We throw to the damn tight ends too much. Throw it deep. You're going to get that. I'm telling you, it's coming. And then somebody's going to ask Eddie Grant about it at a Wednesday afternoon. When you're all at practice, and he's going to give some look, and you're probably just going to shake your head, because I can't have how we've come full circle. Just you write that down. That's going to happen.
All right. I'm penciling it in right now. But I was just kind of fishing for a quote and ended up, I was like, well, what can y'all even do at 12 personnel? Because he was like, you know, we look four deep out there and we should be able to play a lot of guys. And naturally, play action was brought up, and that was unprompted. We're going to throw the ball to tight ends more. So hopefully that becomes more of a key component. Because like, why?
Yeah, I agree absolutely. And especially it's also, with this personnel they have on the team right now.
Right, and it doesn't feel like it's rocket science either. Like that should be a very,
and it makes the quarterback's job easier, especially with this offensive line where you can just lean on people. Got a stable of backs. You use them in ways to help your passing game, and I think that can be a big way to help it, is some play action and giving your quarterback, who is coming off a major injury, to get him some confidence and to get him some swagger and to get that passing game going, which they desperately, I think, want to get revved up.
Yeah, well, and all of the guys you mentioned, too, they finally worked out for coaches this week. Which that it we're one step closer to normal, like it when you actually have coaches watching players do things. Calipari's doing on the basketball end, football doing the same. It's not practice, but it's better than nothing. And we haven't gotten whispers of who's doing well. They're gonna keep that stuff kind of tight lipped for now, because it's really just glorified conditioning.
Love those whispers too.
Oh,
like yeah. This defensive lineman or somebody looks good.
It'll be like a receiver will catch
right.
A long pass. So you're like,
have a one hand grab.
Yeah. Or like,
do you remember the Dorian Baker hype going into, I guess it was 2016?
Was that the year he got hurt?
No. 26, or it might have been. Maybe it was 2015. There was like that. He caught the ball like one. They had a one hand grab they released and they saw. Drew Barker was calling him American Pharaoh.
Oh, yeah. That was a great quote. That was.
And there was all this hype around him, and he was just, you know.
Barker didn't get the memo that only Louisville people are supposed to call their wide receivers horses.
Yeah.
But I think that was the year he ended up getting hurt, though, because there was
you might be right. You might be right on that.
There was a ton of hype that year. But receiver is inevitably going to get hype. Like, I'm sure, like, TV Williams caught a long pass once upon a time, and they're like, oh, man, that TV Williams, he's so fast. But it was probably just like a receiver, you know, balling an assignment of some sort. I will say, though, the whispers, it's going to be hard to get some of those out now because the kind of folks who would get visitors' passes to go in and watch practice, I don't think they're going to be able to hand out visitors' passes all willy-nilly this year. So hearing stuff like that, it's going to be harder to come by. But practice is ongoing. So good to hear.
Still moving forward. We posted it at the site today, but it was pretty much the guy who runs those Atlanta kickoffs. I guess his name's like Greg Stokin.
Yes.
He did an interview with Dennis Dodd, CBS Sports. He's talked to Dodd, I think, a bunch, and he's written about him a couple times now. It's pretty much what he's saying is that he was worried about losing those kickoff games. There's three kickoff games in Atlanta.
Right.
It's West Virginia, Florida State, and then Labor Day Sunday is supposed to be Virginia, Georgia, and then week two it's supposed to be North Carolina, Auburn, all played at that new stadium down there in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
He was worried about those getting eliminated, but now it's seeming like the SEC, the Big 12, the ACC are all planning on their conference game plus one, which for Kentucky, that it would enable them to play Louisville. So it really – it's going to keep those rivalry games, and then everybody else in the league or in those conferences is going to add one game against a team from that pool of three conferences, which nine-game schedule, if you can pull it off, I think that's a pretty good idea. There's no going to be none of the cupcake games
playing
top-shelf competition every week. I think it could be fun if they can figure out how to do it.
Right. And they can make it possible. I will say that obviously you bring in a whole different element than like a professional kind of bubble scenario because, you know, you're going to have two kids on campus. They're going to be interacting with different folks. But if they can make it work, all of those pro leagues, I think of the three major ones, I mean, it was a couple thousand tests and only two people tested positive. So that was good to see. So if they can replicate that to some extent on the college level, then we can have this 8-game plus one season. And some of the matchups would be fun. Like even just the hypothetical ones.
Yeah.
And I like the thought of Kansas is already at Boston College. Because I like the thought of having Kansas, Missouri playing each other because that's an old rivalry that's been gone. Texas A&M versus Texas.
Those two
are worse than Indiana and Kentucky when it comes to basketball. You know, they're talking trash about not playing each other all the time. It would have been so much fun to have that game.
You could have that West Virginia, Virginia, because Georgia plays Georgia Tech and they're scheduled to play Virginia. West Virginia is scheduled to play Florida State. He plays Florida. You could have West Virginia, Virginia.
Kind of
bordering states they're playing. That could be fun.
Yeah, that would be fun. We already get how Iowa State can't play Iowa.
You would put A&M would play an old Big 12. Like, let's just play A&M Texas. Suck it up and play.
Yeah, well,
I guess Texas plays LSU.
So. Yeah, that's where there's a hiccup. So Tyler actually has them all listed out on the site.
Yeah.
And there could be some snoot. Like, who really cares who Syracuse is going to play? You know, like there's a couple of those in there that are going to be kind of tough. But TCU and Texas Tech, one of those is going to end up playing A&M. That just feels natural. And I could see Missouri playing one of them too, because they were
– Right, that would make the most sense.
Yeah. And then Oklahoma State. Oh, if you did the Virginia Tech, West Virginia, Oklahoma State versus a
– Arkansas or something like that.
Maybe Mike Gundy. Arkansas is playing somebody.
They play Notre Dame.
Yeah, yeah. They play Notre Dame already, which thoughts and prayers to Arkansas. But I Mike Gundy versus like a Miami, that could be a lot of fun. Miami, people think Derek King's going to bring the U back again. They could end up being producing a lot of points. So there's potential for some fun matchups in here. Alabama's available because of that USC game. Hell,
right.
Alabama, Oklahoma State, Alabama, Miami, any one of those big names. Just make it happen. We're not doing Alabama.
I know there was Alabama TCU talk because that game was supposed to take place in Dallas.
Oh, so it'd just so be a natural be kind of fit.
TCU to get out of play there.
Right, right. Either way, that kind of appears to be what we're looking at. And do you think that all of this kind of talk, though, and the way that conference commissioners are working together, I feel like we're kind of getting towards that Power 5 split?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
For football, I don't think it'll happen in basketball.
Just because of the tournament, they don't have the capacity for it. But in football –
In a perfect world, this season goes off without a hitch, and it ends up being pretty competitive, pretty fun. There's no real dulls because every game is kind of – it's good competition. It could be like, hey, what are we doing? Like, you know, it's not our responsibility to fund all of these.
MAC schools, athletic departments.
Right. And then that in turn could push some of the G5 schools to be like, why don't we play in the spring?
No.
Like the MAC, their conference commissioners talked about they would love to do something in the spring.
Whereas Sankey, he talked about it the other day, and he was like, we're trying to build a bridge as we snake across the river. So, you know, we would try to make it happen, but that's the last alternative we want to explore.
Yeah, they don't want to do that. And I don't even think you can do it. Like, for the SEC and all the big conferences, I think 5-6 games is probably about the max you could do. I think it just totally messes up everything. It throws a wrench into everything, and you're just scraping together to try to play 5 games. I just don't think it's worth it.
Well, especially
if fans can't go.
I know feasibly the NFL draft can move can move back to as late as like late June or July to kind of accommodate that. But yeah, that kind of appears to be
like, what are we going to do with this class of 2020? Are we doing December, February signing day like planned? Or are we going to move it back to possibly give kids a chance to visit some schools? Like what are we going to do there? And then if you figure that out and then you're playing in the spring as well, then that probably messes up the recruiting calendar for the next year. Then you got to figure out how we're going to fix it to get back on normal schedule. I don't know. But that's something like they're going to have to figure out is this recruiting situation. Because no one can visit anywhere. A bunch of kids are committing without ever even seeing a
right,
campus.
Right, and the thing too, Lockett, is there's a – this week, it'll be on the site for too long, but I'm kind of working on like a quote unquote recruiting big board. We're just laying it all out: who's committed, who's who UK is targeting, and a lot of the really big fish out there. Now Kentucky's still, you know, obviously in good shape with Jagger Burton and a few others, but there's a lot of folks out there that if we were going to let this recruiting process play out, Kentucky's got a much better shot at landing them. But since visits are looking unlikely, they're just closing up shop and saying, all right, well, I'm just going to pull the trigger. So there was a 4-star kid from Virginia, Gilliam, who UK was a top 8, and they could have had a chance at getting a visit out of him and cracking the code in a normal year, but that's not going to happen. And Penn State's been recruiting him since he was like 14, so he'll probably end up there. Damon Payne, who's committing on Sunday, he had a top 10. The 5 schools he was considering visiting were UK, Arizona State — the man must follow some girls on Instagram — Alabama. It was a few others. Kentucky has a shot for the number one.
It was really Kentucky and Alabama.
Yeah, and, but he's decided, you know what, I'm just going to go ahead and commit. If you get a, if you get that visit, you've got a shot. And
right
now, I don't know how many players Kentucky's the kind of crazy gets that you normal otherwise wouldn't get. I don't know how many chances they're actually going to have at that this year.
Yeah, when you look at this recruiting class, to me, I think it evaluating it all comes down to Landon Burton and Crowdis when it's come time to sign, and then the rest of the players in Kentucky.
It's a good thing because Kentucky's pretty good this year.
Right. Well, it's been a weird year in Ohio. They've got like 10 top 110 prospects. 9 of them are going to Ohio State. And then after that, you know, there's a lot of players there, but maybe there's some they passed on. Maybe there's some they missed on. They got Armon Scott, David Wallaball. It's a guy I'm pretty high on.
Yeah.
So they are recruiting Ohio, but there wasn't the chance to land some star power because the star power was just too high in a way, and Ohio State scooped them all up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go and look at Kentucky's built this kind of South Florida pipeline last few years. And I think it's pretty apparent that they're moving out of there.
Bannon ship.
Right. And I think they're going more into Georgia, especially South Georgia, which is something we've talked about. And they've recruited well in the South. They're just not – there's not the blue chip, but there's a lot of high three-star guys. A lot of guys that are not far from being a four-star, having a four-star ranking. So when you look at this class, like, I think we're going down a road where people are going to kind of compare it to 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But –
it's not going to have that rankings pop like last right. year's class.
It's not going to have a huge rankings pop, but I don't think it's going to be as bad as people think it is either. Because as of right now, they've got 13, 14 commitments. Only the if you take out the punter, only one's a low three-star, and that's the kid at junior college, yeah. Joe Cole Willis. So it's a lot of mid and high three-stars.
Yeah.
Right. Which there's another thing on Willis where I want to get to right quick.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see Tony Grimes, that big five-star corner that committed to North Carolina? He's graduating early. He's enrolling.
The kid from A&M, the California kid's doing that too.
The Louisville kid – Louisville just had a kid committed, I think it's like a linebacker, a low three-star linebacker from Georgia who's doing the same thing. I don't know what Willis's grades are. He's been at junior college for a year.
Mm-hmm.
But if his grades are in order, like get to Lexington. You know? Kentucky needs some – they need a body at inside linebacker. Like, yeah. Why wait around to play in the spring?
Oh, that's a that's a good point.
If his grades are in order. I don't know what his grades look like. So.
Yeah, and you don't know what COVID did to how they finished out the credits for the last semester
right.
or doing stuff over the summer.
Right.
But if you could somehow get the academic side in order, yeah, why not? Because I think with a lot of those JUCO kids, I know Kentucky's looking at a JUCO cornerback that's pretty – Kyrie Jackson is his name, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
He's got all these guys. Like what's the point of playing a spring JUCO football season if you can just go and play
especially
a spring
with, you know,
football
some of
season
them,
in college?
They like to get there early anyway.
Right, right. Lonnie Johnson got there early. Steven Johnson got there early. Terry Wilson got there early. So, so I think JUCO football – you're going to see a lot of kids leave. And then California, they're shutting down, I think, all of their high school football. Well, I don't know. They've got like 7 different leagues. You know, they don't just – of course, right. California, they just don't have one central.
I think they split it in half. Like, they have a North California High School Athletic Association, and then they have, like, a South California High School Athletic Association.
One kid who is a – he's a top 300 guy, defensive lineman committed to Texas A&M. They announced California is not playing high school football until January.
Right.
And he said 3 and out. That was his
deuces,
exact.
Right.
Yeah. Said he's just enrolling in the spring, which, hell, I would do the same thing too.
Michigan's 5-star committed quarterback, J.J. McCarthy, he's from Illinois, committed to Michigan. He announced a few months ago that he's just like, well, I don't know if Illinois is going to play high school football this year. I'm going to IMG. This year, and that's where he transferred to IMG, and that's where he's at.
Do you really want to go to be in Bradenton, Florida right now? I guess IMG is where they're doing that the WNBA bubble, so like IMG's probably got to be good, but how good are all the other schools in Florida they're playing against, you know? Like, But, you know, that's a discussion for another day on if you want your kid playing COVID. But it, on a positive recruiting note for UK, we are expecting some cornerbacks to potentially join the fold soon. I'm not sure if it's imminent or if it's hell. Both of them might have popped by the time we're talking today. One of which is from Michigan, as you just alluded to, Maxwell Hairston. He got the offer from UK last week from Steve Klingscale, and he has a decent offer sheet, but the words he was using, you don't often get a kid talking about getting offered from his dream school describing Kentucky football, but that's exactly what happened after Hairston committed. He said Kentucky was his dream school. And I believe Kansas, like Kansas State, a few others were kind of in the mix. Steve Klingscale's reputation up there, I think, with the Hairston kid, if you're saying he's a take, then I have a feeling he'll be jumping on board very soon.
Yeah, he's a guy that has kind of blown up here the last couple of weeks. Minnesota, Purdue. There was another Power Five school all jumped on him within a couple of days. So something happened there. Somebody got some tape or –
Something.
Or grades finally came through, maybe it's a grade issue.
I do like, though, when he uses the phrase dream school. It's a good point of reference to note that when Lamar Jackson fumbled and Kentucky started their bowl streak and 7-win seasons, he would have been 13 years old. He would have been like a seventh grader. Right. So their impressions of football are significantly different than our impressions. For 31-year-olds, you know, they were
going up watching Benny Snell play.
Exactly. Whereas, like, it's a completely different world, and I think that's good to have that kind of frame of reference, because the doom and gloom, which happens quite often when you're a Kentucky fan, or just when you're a football fan in general, like somebody drops a pass, the other team picks it off, like you immediately think like the sky is falling. It's just our natural reaction. It's all going back to hell, you know. We suck again, blah, blah, blah. Well, these kids don't really remember when Kentucky ever sucked. It's been a pretty steady uphill climb over the last 5 years. So it certainly that was a nice reminder. I hope people realize that. There's also one other cornerback, too. This kid's from Tennessee, and he hasn't blown up as of late, but he's got a hell of an offer sheet. His name's Adrian Huey. Mm-hmm. From Nashville, goes Hillsborough High School. And he, over the spring, he got offers from Georgia, South Carolina, Arkansas. For a little while, people thought he was going to end up at Mississippi State. And
all the crystal balls, they were all Mississippi State earlier today, and they all switched to Kentucky.
Yes. So Coach Kling's doing something right in Tennessee. And Luckett, it makes me so happy to get recruits from the state of Tennessee. It just does.
Yeah, that Nashville area especially has been blowing up here recently. So getting in there, I brought up Noah Josie, who's a 4-star offensive tackle from the Nashville area Kentucky's in on. And then last year, of course, they went out and got Trayvon Ripka out of the Nashville area. He's a little – one of the – I think Dixon is – little on the outskirts, but still kind of the Nashville metro area. Mm-hmm. And then now again, going and getting this Adrian Huey kid, it looks like, who's a skinny dude. I mean, he's like 6'1", 150 pounds, 160 pounds. I mean, he went to the opening last year and checked in at 141. Wow. I haven't seen 141 in a long ass time.
Well, I was going to say, what was the weight limit? 130 was the middle school football weight limit.
Yeah.
And I was over that in sixth grade, so I was 150. So that was 25 years.
Right. But he's got – I think he's got a legit 4.4 kind of speed in the 40.
Yeah.
So he's going to be a burner, different type of corner.
I like throwing in one of those, right, because I feel like that's kind of where Kentucky is now, where Stoops prefers the lengthy guys. But then you go out and get a guy like Brandon Echols, and look what – he did with that year. Like the little guys, they some of them can have that feistiness in them that really overcompensates for their size. And I like that from the limited amount of film I've seen. Now, the one thing I would take away from him is he does that thing where he edits out his tackles before the whistle's blown. So, like, you see him hitting the guy, but you don't see the play actually stop. But his instincts on some of these plays where he's supposed to be getting the deep third, but he can see the flat opening up, so he just takes off and hits the guy as the ball's going there. Those kind of instincts and the kind of fearlessness that he attacks players, even if he's not bringing them down, you can add some – eat some PB&Js and drink some whole milk. Like, UK can put some weight on you, but you can't coach that speed. So if in fact, that trigger is pulled and he ends up being a Wildcat, that's another Wildcat that fits that criteria of kind of middle to high three-star who's solid. Yeah. And has – he checks a lot of boxes. He may not check everyone and be in that blue-chip line, but he does check a lot of boxes, and there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah, I think, and again, getting into Nashville metro area, Tennessee, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, suck it.
I think you can realistically hit that area and get 1 to 2 to 3 players every class. There's enough. They're producing 30 Power Five players almost a class now, 20 to 30 guys that are good enough to play Power Five or right there. So I think, and it's, you know, what is it, three and a half hours from Lexington?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I've made it faster.
And it looks like Clinkscale, that's his recruiting area now. And so he's kind of branching out more than just the Detroit area there in Michigan, which he's hitting hard.
I've seen some of the videos of Broadway too, and we should be getting people out of Nashville. So good job, Clink. You're doing the Lord's work. You're healing us from COVID. Also on the recruiting front, I alluded to it earlier. I think we got some good news on Jagger Burton. Now, this isn't like he's going to commit tomorrow kind of stuff, although our good friend Lonnie Demery did tweet out that he's going to be committing August 24th.
Wasn't that his original?
Yeah. It's his birthday. So I don't know if that's new scoop, old scoop, but hey, Lonnie said it. If his scoop ends up being right, I ain't going to be mad at him.
If that's what it is, I feel pretty good about it being Kentucky.
Yeah. But I do think that from what I understand is that Alabama did push really hard early on in the summer, and I think he's pushed back, and it doesn't look like
they filled up too, man.
Right. So it looks like
Alabama has the last week or so.
Yeah. I think you mentioned like they got like a pair of twin offensive linemen,
the Brockermeyer twins out of Dallas.
God. Those sound. What a football guys. My goodness.
One's the number one tackle. The other one's the number one center in the class. and the dad played at Texas, and they're going to Alabama.
Oh, God. Dude, what are you doing, Tom Herman?
Yeah, that's gonna be
Jesus
storyline.
God, get it together, Herman. but I think the Crimson Tide are out of contention for Jagger Burton. So it's really back down to Kentucky or Ohio State. And I mean, hell, you saw
look at Ohio State
dog today.
They've got a nice little O-line crop right now too.
And we go back to it. I was trying to map out the future of Kentucky. Isn't Jagger Burton starting as a true freshman on that offensive line?
Yeah, I think he's got a pretty good chance.
Yeah. So like why wouldn't you? If you can start for a top 25 team in your hometown as a true freshman. Yeah. Like, why wouldn't you do it?
I mean, Ohio State's already got two guards committed in this class that are both ranked higher than Jagger Burton.
So those are the two that are ranked higher.
Mm-hmm.
either way, I think the signs are pointing Jagger to Kentucky. Now, they've been sending those Photoshop signs for a while. But I think things are looking up in that recruitment.
I agree.
There's two other things I want to add, and this actually comes from the world of HBO. So Greg Sankey, he's been doing his little media circus, and I'm not a watcher of real sports, and I didn't end up watching it because I could not stop laughing at the nerd they had interviewing Greg Sankey. Did you see the promo clip, Adam Luckett?
I didn't see the promo clip. Well, I've watched real sports before. Do you remember the guy's name?
Dave Scott.
I know you're talking about. I'm Googling him right now.
I mean, this guy looks like they pulled him out of an Ivy League library. And he's asking Greg Sankey if he should feel responsible for flying kids to campus. It's like, dude, what? Yeah, no, actually, I take this back. They didn't fly him from an Ivy League library because he would then have some sort of remote context of how college campuses operate. This dude's like writing for the New Yorker or something. There's no way you can convince me he knows anything about college athletics. It is so bizarre to see him in the same room.
National media has that reputation of having people talk about college sports that don't really follow or watch college sports.
And Charles Barkley's the only one that we like approve of because he's at least fun when he does it. But that just looked hilarious. I'll probably end up going back and watching it, but it'll annoy me and I'll just turn it off.
I saw Woken kind of release.
Oh yeah, and Woken just dude cannot. Quotes. Dude just thinks everything's a smoking gun. It's freaking annoying as hell. But I think Sankey, if you've paid attention throughout this process, he stayed pretty consistent, and he at least is. The way he talks about things, like it's not like Clay Travis is just throwing him softballs and he's just hammering it out of the park. Like he's staying pretty consistent, composed, and there's a certain amount of like, people, what are you doing? It's almost like I wish he was like a politician telling people to act right, you know, months ago. Like that's kind of what he's been doing the last few weeks. But he's at least laying out kind of the framework and kind of slowly leaking out information and also saying, hey, if these other pro leagues can do it to a certain degree, then why can't we do it as well? And
right.
That makes sense.
Right. He's just trying to buy time as much as time. Now it's running out.
Hey, but baseball started tomorrow. I know you'll be watching.
Go Reds.
Yeah.
Tigers going down tomorrow.
I also – did you see the promo for Hard Knocks?
No, I did not.
Oh, man. And that felt normal. Now, will it be on time? God knows when. But the thing that I forgot about Luckett, when they announced that they're going to be in L.A. and they're going to do a dual training camp for Hard Knocks, there's a really good chance Austin McGinnis is going to be a storyline.
Yeah, if he makes the team or not.
Because it's less about him, because even when Austin was on our podcast, he's a fairly buttoned-up guy. You know, he never wants to get – like, he's about his business. He's out there trying to make a living in the NFL. But if you're having a kicker competition, that's an easy storyline. Especially – I don't know if Zerline missed any last year. He probably missed some big kicks last year. You could play the big misses. Now, hell, I can't remember his name, and he's got a great memory. The Rams coach.
McVay.
And now Sean McVay needs someone he can rely on in the big moments. And then you cut to them kicking in practice, and McGinnis is just dropping dingers, just banging them through the goalposts. And then during the preseason – well, hell, they aren't even going to have preseason games. But during their little scrimmages, because the L.A. teams will end up scrimmaging each other, the kicks are going to be full of pressure, and they're going to play the dramatic music. And the one dude's going to miss him, and then McGinnis is going to come in and bang one. Boom. He gets the job. Hard Knocks hero, Austin McGinnis. Woo! Yeah.
He deserves it. That's another position in the NFL, man. Like, if you get in, you're set. If you're a kicker and you get in, you have to be pretty bad to get voted off the island.
Everybody gets like three tries at least.
Right. If you're a long snapper, it's hard to get in. But if you get in, you're going to be there a while. If you're a punter, it's hard to get in. But if you can crack the door, you're in there. If you're a coordinator or an assistant coach in the NFL, once you're in there, you can find jobs other places.
Oh, that was Sidney Graham's or Lindsey Graham, excuse me, his testimony today or that congressional hearing with Mark Emmert. He said, you don't see a lot of coaches who lose that make a lot of money. And it was like, Charlie Weiss begs to differ. Will Muschamp begs to differ. Come on. The list goes on and on and on and on. Hell, you get paid to get fired in college football. Like, that needs to be said. But like when I was thinking about the McGinnis scenario, I started getting nervous for him. The one thing about McGinnis, that dude, he's cold-blooded, man. Nerves of steel. Don't let nothing get to him. Just because those Hard Knocks cameras are going to be there.